I just I want to thank everyone for acknowledging us on Pastor Appreciation. We really love you guys, and we are here because we love you, and God has placed us here, and we're thrilled about that, and we're excited about what he's doing, but we just want to say thank you. So how do I do it? Just tap it. Okay. So let me start with how I got here. This past July, Rebecca and Emily and I spent a few days in Florida. And it was a vacation to visit some family, and it had been dry, a very dry season before we arrived. They had not had rain in a really long time. They're in Naples, Florida. And the day we arrived, the storms came. And the storms came for this 4 days we were there. And we had gone in the summer before, and it rains every day, but generally for an hour in the afternoon. But these were storms all day long, so we never got to the beach, and we didn't get to do what we thought we were going to do. But in the process of that, we were in the car one day. We had tried to go to a water park, and we were there for about 45 minutes. And they have these alarms in Florida when there's going to be any kind of lightning. These alarms go off at schools, at water parks and parks, because they've had people killed by lightning that you don't even see. So you have to get up immediately and totally leave the park, and then you have to stay outside the park for 30 minutes until they sound an alarm that you can go back in, so they make sure there's no lightning in the area. But it didn't look like it was going to improve, so we all left. And on our way to have lunch, the winds had gotten so bad that the palm trees were bending and waving as the torrential rain was coming down while we were in the car. And God just started in that moment to speak to me about the palm trees. Now, this was long before we had any hurricanes this year or anything that we had been seeing happening in our nation. But God just started talking to me. And so this summer, I spent a lot of time researching palm trees and storms in the Bible. And I didn't realize how significant palm trees were in the Bible. And it goes, the first verse that the Lord brought me to was in Psalms 92, 12 to 15. It says, "The righteous will flourish like a palm tree." The righteous will flourish like a palm tree. What does that mean? Am I going to be tall and thin? Like, I was like, what? "They will grow like cedar of Lebanon, planted in the house of the Lord. They will flourish in the courts of our God. They will still bear fruit in old age." I love that verse. "They will stay fresh and green, proclaiming the Lord is upright. He is my rock, and there is no wickedness in him." But if you do a study of palm trees in the Bible, you will find out some very interesting things. They were very significant in Bible times, and especially in the Old Testament and then into the New Testament, they wave the palms before the Lord. And the reason why is because they represented victory and prosperity. And the reason they did is because the palm tree has so much in it that you can benefit from in the natural. The palm stems are used to make rope and bags and all sorts of things if you research it. And the leaves they use for other things. And then it bears fruit. They even use the sap of the trunk to make wine in the Middle Eastern countries, in the desert areas, which is amazing. I've never had palm wine, but maybe it's on my list. But the palm trees can bear two different types of fruit. One bears dates, and that's pretty much what they were in Bible times. They were getting dates from palm trees. And today we know, what do we see on palm trees? We see coconuts a lot in the tropical areas, right? Heavy fruit, a very heavy fruit in its maturity. Dates have amazing nutritional value, which I didn't even understand until I started researching it. But some people would go so far as to say if you eat a date a day, your body would be physically well. Coconuts, as many of us know, especially now because it's a big rage in the health industry, that coconut oil, coconut meat, coconut milk, coconut water, you can have a coconut everything. But back in Bible times, they knew that the the coconut oil was healing. It had antibacterial properties, so they would rub it on their skin. They would drink the coconut milk. And if you do research on countries where they have a lot of coconuts but not a lot of food, they can nutritionally sustain themselves on coconut meat, eating coconuts. So they have their fruit is very beneficial and healing and life-giving. So my notes are all over the place. I'm sorry. For some reason, even though I had an extra week, I've been in a lot of different ways with this. So I'm just asking Holy Spirit to give me what he wants me to share, because there's a lot. So the other thing I found out about palm trees was that their root system, unlike a, let's look at the roots. Unlike a oak tree that has a few roots that go down far, a palm tree has lots of roots that spread out and go deep. Because often you'll find palm trees in desert areas where there's not a lot of rain, Caribbean areas where rain is not all the time. So they have to be able to go deep in to grasp the water that's down below the surface, deep in the surface, to bring up nutrition and to be able to last. Those roots also keep it a heavy, strong foundation so that when those winds come, those hurricane winds that we saw on the news, right? We saw the hurricane winds and we saw the trees bending down but not breaking. And my cousin, now the same cousins I was visiting in earlier July, endured this Hurricane Irma just a few weeks ago. And my cousin told me that as they were leaving the shelter to go home, you saw trees everywhere. But she just happened to remark to me that every palm tree was standing. Why is that? Well, if you research about palm trees, the trunks are totally different than a regular tree. This is the roots of the palm tree. Look at this, right? This is an oak tree root. See how few there are? This is the inside of a regular tree. We talk about any kind of tree. They have rings, right? We've learned that in school, that trees have rings. Count the rings, you know how many years. This is a palm tree. No rings. Clusters. The clusters make them bendable. So they are able to sway with the wind, unlike an oak tree or another tree that when the winds get that strong, they just crack, because there's no bendability, no flexibility with their trunks. There's a point to all this, people. I'm sorry. It's not just a science lesson. So when I thought about the root system and how the oak tree just has a few, I felt like God was saying to me, if we base our faith on a few things we know about the Lord, a few quotes we like to share, a few truths of the Bible, then our root system is going to be just a few deep roots. That's not going to sustain us through some major storms in our life. But if we go into the Word and do as it tells us in Joshua 1, keep the book of the law always on your lips, meditate it day and night so that you may be careful to do everything written in it, that you will be prosperous and successful. We're back to the prosperous. The righteous will be as a palm tree, which means prosperous. And where does our righteousness come from? Where does that foundation of righteousness come from? It comes from our meditating on the Word day and night. And not just a portion of the Word, but the whole counsel of the Word. So a palm tree does not bear fruit for the first 6 years. The first 6 years is planted, it's just growing. It's growing its root system. So in that time, it's building its root system. It's like us. The Lord gave me an analogy to us. We need to build our root system. We need to take the time to build our root system, because if we do that, then the palm tree bears fruit for a century. 100 years of good fruit, it told us. Into its old age, we will bear good fruit. What's the key of bearing good fruit that brings health and wholeness and healing like the palm tree's fruit to the people? It's about being having a good foundation in the word of the Lord and in Him. I had a picture of a palm tree in a storm. You know, they have to prepare for the palm trees for storms, because if you think about it, if a hurricane hits a palm tree and it has a lot of coconuts on it, what's going to happen? They're going to become like bombs dropping all over the place. And I thought about that. Man, what if we had such amazing healing fruit that when something happens in our life, when we're in a trial, our fruit just flies everywhere and affects everyone in a good way, not knocking them out like a coconut would, but bringing healing. What if we're in the midst of some craziness in our life, and instead of us bowing down and never being able to get back up, a palm tree can go all the way down and bow and come right back up? And you know what scientists say? I read that every time they go through a storm like that, they are stronger. Isn't that incredible? Like, I'm like, palm trees, God? But yeah, palm trees. So there's a reason they're in the Bible everywhere. They're mentioned about 60 times. But you know what's really important is what allows them to bend. They are flexible, and it's the clusters and not the rings. And I felt like the rings were just layers and layers of religious tradition. Now, there is a saying where we say we're solid as an oak, like strong as oaks, and we do need to be strong as oaks. We need to be strong in the word of the Lord and the foundational truth, like the roots of the palm tree, strong in our foundation, but yet teachable and bendable in the spirit, which is the trunk. We need to allow the Lord to be able to speak to us, allow the Lord to be able to give us revelation. But to me, those rings just made a solid religious thinking where nothing can penetrate, nothing can bend us. Once we're taught something, we can't receive anything else. And you know, I encounter that often at work. You know, we hire people that have worked in other places that do the same thing we do. But because we are a firm of almost 100 people now, and we have a lot of clients, probably 30, 40, 50 times what people coming out of a smaller place deal with on a regular basis, Rebecca, as our trainer, has the job of trying to retrain people, right? Because once we learn something, oftentimes we learn something, and it's really hard to change our thinking or to change the way we do things. And if we're like that in the spirit, if we're like that and we do not allow the Lord to say to us, this needs to change in your life if you want to be stronger, if you want to bear more fruit, if you want to have more influence. And we recently, a few months ago, hired a young lady who I'm very informative in an interview. They already know that we expect them to forget everything they know and learn it our way. Are you able to do that? Yes, of course I am. We all think we are. We all think we are. But then we get into the training process and everything is but this, but that. I did it this way. I think this is better. But. They're not listening. They're not hearing. They're not wanting to apply what we're teaching. They're just wanting to go back to the old where they're comfortable. And I think so often, myself included, I kind of turn back to what I'm comfortable in instead of looking at what God's trying to do. Because sometimes it's scary. Am I going to be able to do it? Is that something I can handle? Where's that going to take me? What's the result going to be? I know this works. Is that going to work? Yeah, maybe it's going to work better. So all of that brought me to how do we weather the storm? And, you know, a lot of it is about preparation. In the natural, we prepare for storms, don't we? Like people who live in areas that generally have a lot of storms, they know how to prepare. Not only do they know how to prepare, but when they're building their homes, they're thinking, I need a generator. Oh, I need to put hurricane shutters on my windows. I need to keep water stored. You know, they already have the process in mind. And then, because of the time we live in, we actually have warning that a storm is coming for several weeks in advance, often. So now the real hurry begins. And for those that haven't already established a preparation over the years, it's a panic. And that's what we see on TV. They broadcast the panic. For those that are like, haven't thought of it, because you know what? It'll never happen to me. I'll never have to endure that. There'll never be some illness in my family that is tragic. I'm not going to ever lose my job and not know how to pay my bills. You know, we're talking about storms in the natural right now, but I'm talking about storms that we deal with every day. And oftentimes they hit us out of nowhere. We don't have so much preparation time. So if we wait to the last minute and we're not fully prepared in life, then we're overwhelmed and we're panicked. And then we're not a testimony to the power of God. We're the total opposite. So I spent a lot of time in Acts 27, and I almost didn't speak on it today because that was just the prep, by the way. I almost didn't speak on it today because we've been talking a lot about storms lately. I mean, I've been hearing a lot of messages on it, and if you're here on Wednesday nights, we've been doing some amazing studies, and he just happened to start talking about storms over the past 2 weeks, trials in our life. And then I was listening to this week's teaching for Wednesday night, and he was talking about Francis Frangipanis, who he is. He was talking about how over his lifetime he has read the same scriptures over and over, and every single time there's some different revelation that comes forth. So I've asked the Lord today to give me something that will just impact you, and I believe that's why you are all here. And it comes out of Acts 27, and most of us are probably familiar with it. It is the story of Paul when he is in a storm. And there's so much to this. I don't know why I closed it, and I actually need to read the scripture from here. It is really warm in here, unless it's me. Okay, so we need to resolve that. Sorry. Yeah, of course you do. We can't go by you, Pastor Dave. Sorry. All right. We are going to go to Acts 27 if you want to follow me there. Yeah, it's hot in here. Okay. And I'm going to read it because we're going to talk about it while we read it. So, Paul, as we all know, he had endured a lot of drama and trauma in his life. Like, he's almost lost his life several times by the time we get to this particular situation in his life. He is now a prisoner, and he is headed to Rome, which he knows he has to do, and he knows that will probably be the end of his life at that point. But up until then, from his conversion until this point, he had endured 3 shipwrecks. He had been beaten and stoned, and he survived. And all of that was because he chose Christ. So oftentimes we think that when we choose Christ, that these horrific things are not going to affect our life anymore. But Scripture tells us that it pours on the just and the unjust. Nowhere in Scripture does it say that we are not going to endure anything, that life is going to be awesome from the day we say yes till the day we die. It doesn't say that. It just says that he will never leave us or forsake us. And when the storms come, that he will give us strength, just like the palm tree. We can go through a storm and in the end count it all joy. I don't know that I would count it joy when I'm in it. I've never done that. Has anyone else counted joy while you're in the middle of a trial? No. But when it's over and I look back, I say, man, I would not be here today if that didn't happen in my life. So there is joy in the end if we are looking to the Lord and we are firm and rooted in him. So let's talk about Paul, because if anybody was firmly rooted in Christ, it was Paul, right? So when we're at Acts 27:1, we're going to read the whole chapter. I know, but it's worth it. When it was decided that we would sail for Italy, Paul and some other prisoners were handed over to a centurion named Julius, who belonged to the imperial regiment. So Julius is like the chief cop, right? So he's in the royal guard, and he is there to make sure Paul gets to Rome. Paul is his prisoner. And two people accompanied Paul on this trip that were not prisoners, but they were there for Paul. And one was Luke, who is writing this. And the other is a name I can't pronounce, but someone he brought, Aristarchus. So he had come to know the Lord through Paul and had started to accompany Paul. So the two of them are with him on this ship. We board the ship for Adramyttium, about to sail for ports along the coast of the province of Asia, and we put out to sea. Aristarchus, a Macedonian from Thessalonica, was with us. The next day we land at Sidon, and Julius, in kindness to Paul, so Paul already has favor with Julius, who is his guard, allowed him to go to his friends so they might provide for his needs. From there, we put out to sea again and passed to the lee of Cyprus because the winds were against us. Now, they're on a ship, and the ultimate goal is Rome, okay? But it's going to take a long time. When we had sailed across the open sea off the coast of Sicily and Pamphylia, we landed at Myra in Lycia. There, the centurion found an Alexandrian ship sailing for Italy and put us on board. We made slow headway for many days and had difficulty arriving off Sindus. I'm sorry, I'm destroying these names, but when the wind did not allow us to hold our course, we sailed to the lee of Crete opposite Salamone. We moved along the coast with difficulty and came to a place called Fair Havens near the town of Lycia. Much time had been lost, and sailing had already become dangerous because by now it was after the Day of Atonement, which we just passed, Yom Kippur. So the point being, that is how they knew the seasons. So they're knowing they're going into the fall. It's October, our October. So Paul warned them, "Men, I can see that our voyage is going to be disastrous and bring great loss to ship and cargo and to our own lives also." But the centurion, instead of listening to what Paul said, followed the advice of the pilot and the owner of the ship. So Julius, who was assigned as Paul's guard, actually had authority over the owner and the captain, but he chose to listen to them. And the reason they didn't, I did some research on this, the reason they didn't want to stay in the port they were in was because it was a very small town and there was really nothing to do, and they knew they would have to stay there for several months before they could travel again. It was winter. So they made the decision because they wanted to be sure that their sailors and everyone on the ship had a nice place to stay in port, that they would move on. But Paul said to them, "Listen, this isn't a wise idea." The fact that they even considered listening to a prisoner speaks volumes to me. It says Paul already had made a mark on them. His life had already made a mark on them. He's a prisoner, yet they're listening. They contemplated it. And Paul, he wasn't talking out of something prophetic here. He was talking out of wisdom. Because sometimes we think if God's in control, if we're giving it over to God, then we stop using wisdom. We don't ever stop using wisdom. If we are in the middle of something in our life that is tragic, we still use wisdom. Even when you have the promise of God, Paul had a promise. God told him he had to go to Rome. He knew that. He had that promise. He knew he'd end up in Rome somehow. But yet he's using wisdom here, saying, "Listen, this isn't a wise thing." But they chose to do it anyway. Sometimes we end up in the midst of our trials because of someone else's decisions. Sometimes it's our decision, our sin, that causes us to be in a situation that we don't want to be in. Sometimes our trials are caused by choices we've made. Sometimes our trials are caused by things out of our control, like this for Paul. He was a prisoner. They were in charge. He had to do what they said. So sometimes the trials we go through, my difficulties at work, 80% of the time are not my fault. 20% they are. 80% they're not, because I work for three people who have final say. I don't always get to make the decision, and then I have to do what I'm told to do, right? Sometimes it's just an influence, outside influences that come our way. Just like the weather. We don't have control over the weather. God does. We don't have control over the weather. Sometimes it's just a part of our life. We live in a broken world, and we are going to endure stuff. Scripture tells us we are going to endure stuff. So here's Paul now. He gets on this ship. We'll keep going. Since the harbor was unsuitable to winter in, the majority decided that we should sail on, hoping to reach Phoenix and winter there. There was a harbor in Crete facing both southwest and northwest. When a gentle south wind began to blow, they saw their opportunity, and so they weighed anchor and sailed along the shore of Crete. Before very long, a wind of hurricane force called the Northeaster swept down from the island. So not long after they left, the storm hits. The ship was caught by the storm and could not head into the wind, so we gave way to it and were driven along. And if you read that in the message, it says the ship was like a cork in the sea. Has anybody here ever been in a storm on the sea? I have. It is one of the scariest things I have ever endured in my life. Okay? So here they are. And let's think about their situation. When we were in our storm, we had a pretty good idea it was going to be happening. There was a 50-50 chance. We made, the captain of the ship I was on, boat, made a decision to go. I was in it. I had no choice. My dad was there too. But we had a compass. We had a radio. We were able to get help. We were able to communicate with people on land. We knew what was happening and which way to go to avoid the worst of it. They didn't have any of that. Do you know how they knew which way they were going? Anybody know? The sky. What happens in a storm? Do we see the stars? Do we see the sun? Do we see the moon? No. They were lost at sea. So not only are they in a storm, but they know they're lost. I can't even fathom, right? But let me tell you something. If we are not grounded and rooted in the Lord, we are lost in the middle of a crisis in our life. And you know that. Why? Because you see it happen to so many people who don't know the Lord. I see it all the time. They lose hope. Hopelessness sets in. As we passed to the lee of a small island called Caudia, we were hardly able to make the lifeboat secure. So the men hoisted it aboard. Then they passed ropes under the ship itself to hold it together. Can't even fathom this. This is a big ship, people. You will find out as we read on that 276 people were on the ship. When I've always read through this and I didn't even realize. I don't know how I missed the 276 people. That's a ship, not a boat. Because they were afraid they would run aground on the sandbars of Cyprus, they lowered the sea anchor and let the ship be driven along. We took such a violent battering from the storm that the next day they began to throw the cargo overboard. They started throwing off all the non-essential stuff to make the ship lighter. And let me tell you something. When I'm in crisis, when it's a real crisis in my life, what am I doing? Nothing else matters to me anymore. Everything in all the excess fluff of my life goes because I am focused on what is happening and how we're going to get through this. And that's what these guys were doing. And that's sometimes what we need to do. When we're going through a rough time in our life, we can't have all of this excess stuff that we're dragging through. We have to allow the Lord to take away what he needs to take so that we could focus on getting through the storm, depending on what it is. Sometimes it's something we need to resolve in us. Sometimes it's just helping someone through it. Sometimes it's being there, just being there, being present. So often we are just not present. We're so busy, distracted. It's the way we live now. Whether it's work or social media or TV or movies or whatever it is we're into, we are distracted. And if we're allowing that distraction to take us away from what's important, when we're in the middle of these things, they're not going to get better. We're not going to be able to figure it out. This was wisdom at work. Let's make the ship lighter. On the third day, they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. So the first day, they were just cutting off what they carry along the sides. You never see a ship where they have all the cargo along the sides of it tied on. The next day, they just started throwing the stuff over. This is days now. Days. When neither sun nor stars appeared for many days and the storm continued raging, we finally gave up all hope of being saved. And this tells me that even Paul gave up hope, because it says we all gave up hope. We haven't heard from Paul here yet. I don't know. I think I would have given up hope after the first day of being at sea, tossed around, no way of knowing where I am, and more than likely, very sick. When I was caught in a storm, I was so sick, all I did was go from the bunk to the bathroom, bunk to the bathroom. And even though most of these guys were sailors, it sounds to me like they were not doing well. Because the next thing says, after they had gone a long time without food, not because they didn't have the food, because they probably couldn't keep the food down. So now we're talking a lot of days, weeks, without seeing the sun, without seeing the moon, without having food. They had to be weak, tired, exhausted, scared, hopeless. That's where they're at. Has anybody ever been there? I have. And usually it's because those storms just come up and smack you in life. You're not expecting it. Things are going great. And something tragic happens, and it's like, where did this come from? And how do I deal with it? And where do I go? And you feel hopeless because you can't fix it. They had no control over this boat or the ship or the storm. They had no control. So after they had gone a long time without food, Paul stood up before them and said, "Men, you should have taken my advice not to sail from Crete. Then you would have spared yourselves this damage and loss. But now I urge you to keep up your courage, because not one of you will be lost, only the ship will be destroyed. Last night, an angel of the Lord, to whom I belong and whom I serve, stood beside me and said, 'Do not be afraid.'" So that tells me Paul was afraid, and he was hopeless. "Paul, you must stand trial before Caesar," renews the promise, "and God has graciously given you the lives of all those who sail with you. So keep your courage, men, for I have faith in God that it will happen just as he told me. Nevertheless, we must run aground on some island." So this tells me that when Paul was hopeless and afraid, he knew where to go. Where'd he go? Because his roots went deep, just like the palm tree. Because there were so many of them. He spent years and years walking with the Lord and enduring trial after trial, which only strengthened him. He knew where to go. I mean, it doesn't tell us in Scripture, but I can imagine that he was sitting alone saying, "God, you made me this promise. You told me what I was going to do. Where are you and what is going on?" And then God sent an angel. Sometimes our angels come in the form of people. People in our lives that are trying to speak wisdom into us, and we often brush it aside. "You have no idea what I'm going through." I've done it myself. But that doesn't mean God isn't using the people around you, which is why we are always supposed to be in community and fellowship and have people that can speak into our lives. Paul didn't have a particular person here because he was probably the strongest of faith aboard this ship. And God sent an angel to speak to him. And then God used Paul to transform and bring these people out of this situation. But it didn't just come to an end the next morning. He didn't wake up and the sun was out and the sea was calm. They still had to hold on to this promise. On the 14th night, we were still being driven across the Adriatic Sea. Can you imagine? I would have jumped ship, honestly, because I know what it feels like to be sick at sea. Like, you can't wait to be on land or die, really. So on the 14th night, we were still being driven across the Adriatic Sea when about midnight, the sailors sensed they were approaching land. They took soundings. Now, they couldn't see the land. It was too dark. They didn't have one of those sound things like we have on boats now that tell you, oh, that you're in 10 feet, oh, you're in 5 feet, oh, you're in 100 feet. No. They had other ways of doing it. So they felt like the water was 120 feet deep. A short time later, they took soundings again and found it was 90 feet deep. Fearing that they would be dashed against the rocks, they dropped 4 anchors from the stern and prayed for daylight. In an attempt to escape from the ship, the sailors let the lifeboat down to the sea, pretending they were going to lower some anchors from the bow. Then Paul said to the centurion, Julius, and the soldiers, "Unless these men stay with the ship, you cannot be saved." So the soldiers cut the ropes that they held the lifeboat and let it drift away. Here we go again. They have a prisoner, Paul, using wisdom. What was the wisdom? Hey, the sailors are the ones that know how to sail this thing. Not the soldiers, not the prisoners, just the sailors. If they leave, we're dead. This is all just common sense wisdom that Paul was using. It wasn't that an angel appeared to him and said, make sure they don't leave. He said, he knows that God promised him that they would all be saved. And so now he sees them trying to leave and he knows that they're the ones that know how to drive the ship. So they needed him. And then the centurion listens to him. That's the guard who's guarding him and cuts their access to the lifeboats. Sometimes we think that there is an escape out of what we're in. And we try to take that escape, but it only brings us right around the mountain to the same place again. Because it's the easy way out. We don't have to go through it to the other side. We're just escaping in the middle of what we're going through. And it looks good. It looks like it's the way out. It kind of makes sense almost. But wisdom told Paul that if they were not with them, they wouldn't survive. So sometimes we have to listen to wisdom and not to what looks easy. Just before dawn, Paul urged them all to eat. For the last 14 days, he said, you have been in constant suspense and have gone without food. You haven't eaten anything. Now I urge you to take some food. You need it to survive. Not one of you will lose a single hair from his head. After he said this, he took some bread and gave thanks to God in front of them all. Then he broke it and began to eat. They were all encouraged and ate some food themselves. Altogether, there were 276 of us on board. When they had eaten as much as they wanted, they lightened the ship by throwing the grain into the sea. So first they fortified themselves, and then they got rid of everything. When the daylight came, they did not recognize the land, but they saw a bay with a sandy beach, where they decided to run the ship aground if they could. Cutting loose the anchors, the things that hold us back, they left them in the sea, and at the same time, untied the ropes that held the rudders. Then they hoisted the foresail to the wind and made for the beach. But the ship struck a sandbar and ran aground. Could anything else go wrong? The bow stuck fast and would not move, and the stern was broken to pieces by the pounding of the surf. The soldiers planned to kill the prisoners to prevent any of them from swimming away and escaping, but the centurion wanted to spare Paul's life and kept them from carrying out their plan. He ordered those who could swim to jump overboard first and get to land. The rest were to get there on planks or other pieces of the ship. In this way, everyone reached land safely. So they all ended up on land safely. So let's just go back and review a few things here. When things are out of our control, they're never out of God's control. No matter how humanly impossible the situations we are in, God can restore it. God can fix it. He has a plan. When Paul and them were caught at sea, he didn't gather all his angels to brainstorm a rescue plan. He didn't have to do that because he already knew what was going to happen. He already had it in control. He knew what was going on. He knows what's going on. He hasn't fallen off his throne. He hasn't had to figure it out. He already knows what's happening in your life. He knows. This storm did not take God by surprise. He knew it was going to happen. I think about, we were talking also this past Wednesday about how Jesus sent the disciples out in across the way in the boat, and they hit that storm, right? Jesus knew that there was going to be a storm, but he sent them. Why? Then he walked out on water to the ship to help them. And Peter's faith was increased tremendously, all of them, because now they could see what was happening, how he was going to come to them in the storm. And yes, God has the power to calm the storm and the sea and fix your crisis and stop it right away, but oftentimes he doesn't. Paul knew the story of Jesus speaking to the storm and it stopping, but he knew it wasn't happening here, even though they were at a place of hopelessness. For some reason, God decided not to do it, to take them through. But let me tell you something. In the process, Paul stood firm on what he believed in and was the leader that led 275 people to spare their lives. They wouldn't have lived had he not been there, I believe. They all would have jumped ship by then. I would have. But because Paul was so grounded and founded in the word of the Lord and the promises of God, that he knew where to go in a time when he was hopeless. And he took all 275 of them with him. He did not leave them behind. He stood up and declared what the Lord had said and promised them that they would not, that their lives would be spared. And that is something we carry in us. We can carry in us. That in the midst of every crisis that hits our family, that hits our community, that hits our city, that hits everywhere we, every place we have a place of influence. It's incredible to me that Paul even had influence on this ship. He was the prisoner. I can't get beyond that. So it doesn't matter what our status is. We could be the dishwasher. We could be the file clerk. We could be something of a lower level, not the boss or the big cheese like Julius. And have influence if we are grounded and founded in the word of the Lord and we have him in us. We are secure in who we are. Paul was secured in who he was. He was secured in the promises of God. We are not necessarily out of God's will when we hit a storm. We were taught that early on, that if you're going through something, then something's not right in your life. And I don't agree with that. We can't say that about Paul here. You read his life, you can't say that he was in some kind of sin and that's why he was in this. And I'm not saying that that never happens. Yes. If we are living a life where we know we're making wrong choices, then we may hit some storms that we have caused. But we could be right where he intends us to be and still have chaos happening around us. God did tell Paul he had to go to Rome. He never gave him the details on how he would get there. I think if he did, he might have thought twice, right? I know there have been many times in my life where God has said to me, this is what you're going to be doing, or this is where I want you to be. But he didn't show me what it was going to take to get to that point. And there's good reason why. And in the midst of it, I'm questioning often, okay, God, is this you? Okay, God, did I miss it? And we should. We should ask the Lord that. I'm not saying not to, because he will close doors if we've taken a wrong turn. But don't think, because there's something not going according to plan, that it is not his plan. Because our plans, he doesn't think like we do. And he knows what needs to be done in us in order to get us to where he needs us to be. And sometimes we have to go through some stuff. James tells us, consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, when you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. If life were a fairy tale, we would never really grow in our faith. If the day we said yes to Jesus, everything was perfect, what would we? We could just go to heaven. Just take me now, Lord. It's not a bad idea, but that's not what God set us here to do. He has called us to be a witness to the lost, wherever we are and whatever we're doing. And we are not a witness if something hits our life and we crumble to our feet and we can't get up. We are only a witness when we know how to endure what's happening in the world. And let me tell you something. I think God is speaking about this so much lately because what we're seeing in the natural, in storms, we're going to see in the spirit. There is just a battle raging in this nation, across the world. You can't look at the news and say it isn't. And we, as Christians, as people who call ourselves children of God, daughters and sons, need to know who we are and whose we are and how we are going to stand through all of it. Because it is our lives that will be the testimony that draws others to Him. But if they see us responding the same way that someone who does not know God responds, then what? How are we different? How are we an example? We are never out of God's care when we get caught in a storm. Even though they had no idea where they were and they were lost at sea, God always knew where they were. Sometimes we feel like He has taken 15 steps back and we are standing alone. But He always knows where we are and He always knows what we need. In fact, He knows better than we know what we need right where we're at. I do believe that God cared for all 276 of those people on board because Paul was there. And I think about that sometimes, you know, like if my kids get on a plane and go somewhere and I'm not with them, I'm praying that they're getting there safely. Maybe they go on a missions trip, any of our kids in this house, we're praying for them the whole time. And the fact that we're praying for them means that everyone they're with is protected too. But I have a special heart for those that are ours. I'm not thinking about the other 100 people that are with them. I'm thinking about ours. I'm thinking about my kids. And I feel like God's the same way. He cares so much for His kids, those that serve Him, are rooted and grounded in Him, that not only is He going to spare Paul, but He's going to spare all 275 that are with Him. He didn't have to do that. But He did. So we have the influence and the impact to save many. And Paul was powerful in his beliefs and in his prayer life. It is his prayers that brought this ship to safety. And we have to understand that our prayers can take people through to safety. My cousins were in the midst of this storm. And I got a call from them one day, and it was one of my cousins, and it was a panicked phone call. Panicked. They have lived there for almost 20 years now, but never have they endured a storm of at least the threat was so intense that it was the first time they ever left their homes and went into a shelter, and fear was overtaking them. And, you know, we have the ability to be influential to people who are in the midst of a storm, because sometimes when we're in the middle of it, it's hard to find our focus because we're being tossed about a bit if we're not as grounded as we need to be. But that's where we come in. That's where we come in as the people who are surrounding them or surrounding each other. So when we see someone in our life that is going through something tragic, it is our position to be, to speak truth. Just like the angel came to Paul and spoke truth to Paul, do not be afraid. We get that opportunity to do that for others. If we are grounded enough, we could do it. We could send them the life rope and pull them up out of the place of despair. It's so easy to sink. Paul was in that place. He had already endured 3 shipwrecks, but this time it says he had lost all hope and he was afraid. There are things in our life that could take us to that point. And that's why we stay in community. She knew where to call, right? She called. She knew if she called that I would give her hope. And people need to know that if they call us or they come to us or they confide in us, that we carry the hope, that we could give her hope, give them hope to get through what they're going through. And what is more incredible is that when you are a powerful person of prayer and you are connected, you can pray. When she was driving down her block that day, every house had damage but hers. When her three kids went to their homes, every house around them had damage but theirs. What is that? That's God. That's God saying, I'm protecting my kids. We have power in prayer. We may have to endure the storm, but we don't have to be as affected by the storm. See, Paul was exposed to the exact same thing that all 275 people endured on that ship. He had to go through the same fear. He had to go through the same seasickness. He had to endure everything. He wasn't pulled out of it and set aside until it passed. He had to endure the storm. But because of him, everybody else lived. But God came to him in that place and gave him the assurance he needed to stand firm. And I believe God will give you the assurance you need to stand firm in every storm that comes your way. So, the last thing I want to talk about is oftentimes, and as we see here, if you read on, they landed in a place they did not know. So oftentimes when we come out on the other side of what's happening in our life, we find ourselves in an unfamiliar place, someplace new, someplace unexpected. And we have to believe that God has taken us to this place for a new beginning, a different purpose, to influence a new influence in our life. And I've seen it many times with John and I, where we've gone through rough seasons of things happening, and we come out on the other side lighter, changed ourselves, stronger, but totally in a new place in life. And that's what happened here. And if you read on, you'll find out that they stayed 3 months in this city of Malta, where they ended up. They had never been there before. But by the time Paul left there 3 months later, most of that community was saved and knew the Lord. So he had impact wherever he went, even in the new unfamiliar place. And God gave him favor wherever he was. He was readily welcomed. Remind you, he's still a prisoner. He's still a prisoner. It's an incredible story. So I want to leave you with that. And John 16:33, it says, I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. He has overcome it all. So there's nothing you will experience that he has not already experienced. And he knows how you feel.